On this episode of Secrets of Staffing Success, we're going to talk about how to brand your process to give you a competitive edge. And we're also going to talk about when is it okay to say no to a client. Today's episode is brought to you by Haley Marketing Group. If you're like most staffing firms, finding good candidates right now is a major struggle. At Haley Marketing Group, we have a team of experts that will help you recruit both active and passive candidates, drive more traffic to your job board, and increase applications. To learn more, give us a call at 888-696-2900.
Welcome to Secrets of Staffing Success from Haley Marketing. Candid conversations with innovators and thought leaders in the staffing and recruiting industries. Your host for Secrets of Staffing Success is Todd Lewandowski. And now, here's Todd.
Our guest this week on Secrets of Staffing Success is the CEO of McGrath Systems. He's Mike Wiley. Mike, thanks for joining us this week.
Todd, thanks for having me.
Well, we're really excited to talk to you about a bunch of different topics. But before we get to that, why don't you give us your 60-second elevator pitch on McGrath Systems?
Sure. So McGrath Systems is an enterprise-wide staffing and recruiting firm based outside of Philadelphia. We cover the entire United States through some satellite offices. And essentially, our sweet spot is your manufacturing, distribution, call center type environments, anything that's your volume-based and tend to need a little bit more managed service support wrapped around it.
And how did you yourself get started in this industry?
Coming out of college, I was referred into a large group at the time. It was Aerotech. Now they're a conglomerate of multiple operating companies. But I was referred in through some friends. Aerotech was going through kind of a hyper growth mode at that point. Went from about $100 million to $1 billion in 4 years.
Wow.
And I just, you know, through that referral and opportunities that opened up thereafter, I had a lot of chances to see and do things in the industry that you know, most folks wouldn't that early out of college.
So I want to start with one of your key differentiators, because as soon as I go to McGrathSystems.com, it's, you know, what greets me right away, and that's your blended workforce solutions. Can you kind of give us a definition of that and how you use it when you're marketing to new clients?
Yeah, I'll give you a live example. And this is really a conversation that took place this week with a prospect. So in many situations, clients are going to recruiting and staffing services for various things, and they may have one group that does this and another group that does that. And a lot of times one can't do everything, and we recognize that. So I like when we have a client that is going to be ramping or hiring, you know, north of 50, maybe 100, 200 employees, I like to come in as a managed service provider, provide the large majority of the workforce in specific areas, but any other area that is not a sweet spot for us or a core competency, we're going to align ourselves and bring in subcontractors. And many times for that, for example, if that's IT, if that's accounting, that we may not necessarily have the expertise in, we'll leverage the existing supplier base to continue to support that customer. But we're going to manage the requisition and the interview process and things like that. In addition to that, there are also scenarios where the clients don't necessarily need or want to engage people on a full-time permanent basis, but what they do have certain areas that they will want, say, attempt to hire. So we'll blend, you know, attempt to hire, a pure contract, direct hire, and then some other ancillary services into that to just support the customer holistically, as opposed to just coming in and doing one segment, one department, one area.
And I really like that too. And it's something we talked about, geez, probably our second or third episode of this podcast, is taking your process and taking your services and branding them. Because I think it really shows, you know, it feels to the client that they're getting something special that they're not getting from your competitors. Is that kind of how you guys have framed that with your clients when you're talking to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you another example. And we may talk about the current skills shortage in a minute here. But one of the things that we've developed here, and I think we've even trademarked it, is a what we refer to as direct source model. So direct source for us is we identify a candidate or candidates. We provide them to the client to evaluate. They interview them. They select them to start working for them. They begin working day one as a employee of the client. And as opposed to a traditional, all right, we'll just charge you a fee. We're not going to charge a fee of 20%, 25%. We're going to charge them on a weekly basis, and we charge on a weekly basis, could be a couple hundred dollars, could be up to $1,000, depending on the skill set. If that candidate doesn't work out or falls off, there's no more payments due. It falls off in the third week, for example, if the candidate didn't work out, and the client is only responsible for those 3 weeks. And we run that out for a 6-month period or a 3-month period, depending on the relationship with the client. What that does is that automatically puts candidates on the client's books. They're getting the benefits of what the client is offering. The candidates tend to feel more secure being on a customer's books as opposed to the temp staffing's books right away. And it just helps with retention purposes for the client. We see the margin by billing that we need by billing on a weekly basis. The candidate gets what they need, and the client ultimately is happier because the retention for this specific service is much higher than our temp to hire, and much higher than traditional temp to hires that you see in the marketplace.
Well, you did mention that skills gap, so let's jump there. You know, we hear so much about this skills gap, and nobody seems to have a great solution for it right now. But what role can the staffing and recruiting industry play in trying to close that gap?
Yeah, there is a major skills gap, and you know, being in a manufacturing space, where we do some stuff in construction and other areas. Over the years, we've watched skill sets just kind of begin to evaporate. And those skill sets were tied to anything in the electronic space with you know, solderers, anybody doing surface mount soldering. That stuff has really just moved offshore. Machinists are nearly impossible to find. So I've reached out. I've connected with some people that are running apprenticeship programs. And that's about one of the best solutions and opportunities that we've identified is really going out to clients, discussing with clients, okay, we all know the problem. We know that there's an issue here. So let's just talk about approaching it from potentially a different angle. And can we bring people in that may have come through a tech school, didn't have machinist training, but let somebody shadow instead of paying them $20 an hour, let's pay them 14, but let them shadow for 6 months with another machinist. If we want to formalize a apprenticeship program, we can formalize it through the state as well to allow our customers to get tax credits. But for the most part, it really is trying to you know, train a workforce that doesn't have the available options to train. Like the trade schools really have gone backwards in terms of keeping up with what the workforce demands of the United States are. Many people decided, hey, I want to go straight to a typical college and not look at our blue collar skill sets. And I want to go to University of XYZ and not down the path of being electrician, plumber, machinist, or any of those skill sets. And because of that, a lot of the trade schools have eliminated programs, and eliminating those programs puts us in a position where we haven't been training them. So I figured if we started having dialogue with our customers about, you know, their training program and how we can make this right and build in something that will be repeatable, we can solve some of the challenges and the constraints for our customers.
That's a really great idea there. And it's interesting. I haven't thought about that concept of, you know, the trade schools kind of going backwards. You do hear there's so much emphasis in this country of going to college, getting your 4-year degree. But there's that big gap, like we talked about, of, you know, the trades that are just, they're just not attracting young kids anymore.
No, they're not. And you know, candidly, these folks coming, if you went down the track of, I want to become an electrician, or I'm going to go to college with a liberal arts degree and then come out with a ton of debt. the guy who went down the electrician path in, you know, 2 years out of an apprenticeship program or 2 years out of a trade school is going to be so much better off. Their personal financial statements are going to be completely different because of the debt load that the students going to college are taking on.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, you're coming up on your 15th anniversary here at McGrath System since you started it. How has recruiting changed over that time, and where do you see it going to attract this next generation?
Yeah, so I've been in the business. I've been in the industry for north of 25 years or so, right? And a lot has changed. And it's way back when I started, we were still getting faxes for emails and or for resumes and cover letters. We were getting them mailed in, right? So lots of things have changed in our space. The internet has done wonders for us and other industries. Just since I've owned McGrath, the source of candidates was primarily through your job boards. 15 years ago, it was the heyday for Monster and Career Builder and Hot Jobs. Today, we can't and don't really need those services and don't procure them the same way we did in the past. It's really moved from, you know, the job board era to a aggregator site like you're Simply Hired and you're Indeed. That shifted into more of a kind of a community approach where, you know, if we don't have a job for you today, sign up for our job alerts on various websites and, you know, you'll get a notice. Where it's shifted more recently is that the applicant tracking systems have really, really looked at, it appears that they're looking at this much more holistically and saying, okay, not only do we have to be a repository for resumes and client data and be able to kind of match the two of them, but it's also got to be a nurturing platform where we're keeping candidates engaged, we're keeping clients engaged, we're also able to keep data and documents for storage for candidates, for clients. The onboarding process has to be efficient. It has to be, you know, with keeping the candidate in mind so that the candidate is having a good onboarding experience. The ancillary services that we all utilize, like background and drug screening and stuff like that, that most applicant tracking systems are integrating that into their platforms. So I think that's kind of where we are today. And as we move forward, the functionality of AI and blockchain, I think, will begin to accelerate the vetting process and make it less hands-on and more of a smoother candidates can interact, and through AI, the better, more qualified candidates will bubble up to the top and ranked higher, as opposed to today, we're still doing this traditional, you know, slow phone call back and forth or email back and forth. And I think AI, you know, in the very short term, probably 2 to 3 years, is going to change that dramatically for us, so that our recruiters are ultimately only talking to what appears to be the qualified or most qualified candidates available in that marketplace.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, how do we toe that line between embracing all that technology and still having that hands-on touch? Because at its core, this industry is still about relationships with clients, relationships with candidates.
Yeah, I think that's up to the individual staffing firm, right? There's many different business models just within this space. There's plenty out there that really just focus solely on, say, your VMS, and it's that volume just drive candidates through this portal. And then there's the other ones that want to approach the candidates and the clients with a hands-on approach to give them a good positive experience and help solve problems for both parties. I think the value in, you know, what we do at McGrath is we want to hold their hand. I want to solve problems for both customers and for candidates. We have candidates that come to us, and if we have the conversations about where do you want to be in, you know, a year or 2 years, well, this might be a good stepping stone for you. Or, okay, Bob, you're making $13 an hour today. Would you consider an apprenticeship to learn how to be a machinist, for example, or an electrician? That begins to kind of bring additional value to these candidates, and they tell their friends and they tell their relatives, and that's how we get, you know, a decent referral flow coming back to us.
I want to stay in the recruiting angle a little bit, because we've been talking a lot in recent episodes about keeping recruiters engaged during times like this with a talent shortage. What do you do as CEO of McGrath to ensure that your recruiters are staying motivated and staying engaged?
Yeah, that's really hard. All of us are trying to, you know, figure that conundrum out. But the main thing I think that I do is I'm very honest. I'm very transparent. I speak to the team about where the economy is, what I'm seeing in the economy, what unemployment rates, you know, look like in various counties around our locations, so that we can talk, one, intelligently to the clients, and two, to the candidates. There's no one in our space that can wave a magic wand and you know, keep people engaged and things like that. But we've got an amazing team of very experienced folks that have been through ups and downs. And myself, having been through ups and downs of, you know, there's plenty of talent out there, and then there's zero talent out there, and everything in between.
Yeah.
It's a matter of really just saying, hey, look, this is here's how the pendulum swings and what happens when we're in a tight labor market. It's not easy. It's going to be harder. Your days of putting a posting out and getting 150 to 200 decent applicants are over. And if we're sitting at a 2.3% unemployment rate in a certain county that we're in, the challenges ultimately need to be discussed with the clients as well, right?
Right.
Your clients need to reconsider candidates that they probably wouldn't have looked at a year or two ago. And that's ultimately bringing the recruiters into those conversations, whether it's on a call or live in person, to just say, hey, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Client, here's what we're seeing. We're the experts in the labor in this area, and the labor in this area is telling us that it's very, very difficult to find that person. But if we open up kind of some of the skill sets, or if we open up, and ask you to consider somebody that's an 8 out of a 10 instead of a 10 out of a 10, that'll help move the needle and allow us to get those candidates to you.
How much pushback do you get from clients when you have to have those conversations, whether it's about that, you know, like you said, taking an 8 instead of a 10, or even saying to the client, listen, we can't find anybody at this pay rate. You know, we need to offer $2-3 more for this job to get an 8, 9, 10 out of 10 candidate.
I started these conversations, probably 2 years ago. year and a half to 2 years ago, where we saw the labor rates creeping up and creeping up and creeping up. It really is, I don't get much pushback at all. And about 2 years ago, when we first started having the conversations, it was a little bit here and there, but it's all over the news. Like everybody in the world knows the unemployment rate in the United States is very, very low. There are sectors that are, you know, well beyond what the national average is. So the clients have pretty much already been primed. And if it's a matter of a budgetary problem where the client can't necessarily justify a $25, $30 bill rate or whatever the number is, it may not be a good fit. It may just simply be that we have to say, okay, well, here is what I'm seeing. Here's a survey in your local area. Within a mile, there are 10 fast food restaurants that are paying $12 an hour that are on bus routes that are within, you know, a mile of you, and you want to pay the same rate. We're not going to get anybody with skills who are also applying to jobs that require zero skills. And as you have those conversations, there are clients that you have the conversation and they go, no, I'm going to stick with where I am. And 2 months later, without fail, they call you back and go, we still can't fill that same position that we talked to you about a couple of months ago. How about we consider bumping the pay rates up? There's two drivers to making staffing successful when you're trying to find candidates. It is the pay rate is number one, and number two is, you know, the overall work environment / opportunity. Is the work environment such that the client is concerned about their own employees and the temp workforce, or are they just focused on pushing product? And you know, the ones that are concerned about the employees and recognizing that, you know, that's really what makes a company, they're the ones that we tend to gravitate to and work best with.
Is it ever okay to say no to business? Have you ever had to, you know, we talk about finding the perfect fit employee. Can you, you know, say no to those people that aren't a perfect fit client?
Todd, we do it all the time. And I would much rather be in a situation to say no to the business that doesn't fit than accept anything. You've got way too many pitfalls in our industry. You have folks that want to offload risk and essentially put temps in to the more quote unquote riskier roles, which increases our exposure. You have clients that, you know, aren't the most astute at just recognizing that they've got to put some training into these folks and help them get acclimated into a new workforce and a work environment. I'm perfectly fine walking away from business that doesn't fit. Clients that tell us that, you know, no, I can't increase my bill rate or I can't increase the pay rate to these individuals, and the pay rate is below market, we're going to walk from that. There's no reason for us to sit and just spin our wheels when we know that position is going to continue to be open, or it's going to be constant rework by filling it. The person doesn't work out, backfilling it. And you just rinse and repeat that over and over and over again. That's just going to cost us time and money in the long run. Yeah. So I'd much rather walk from, you know, quasi opportunities and wait for the ones that are just a good fit. The management team on the other side, you know, is engaged. They have skin in the game. We all want to do this the right way. And, you know, those are the clients that we just tend to do really well with.
Last question before we let you go. You know, lots of speculation about the next recession. It seems like we're overdue at this point. What are you doing now to prepare for a possible recession in the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, so that's a million-dollar question. Is you know, one, we're overdue, and what, you know, when is it going to hit? And some of the stuff that I'm doing now that I really haven't done in the past is I'm paying a lot closer attention to like Bureau of Labor Statistics and what macro information, macroeconomic information is available to me. And just trying to monitor it and just trying to watch it and as much as possible, keep it from kind of, you know, sneaking up on us. The things that we saw in the past were direct hire fell off a cliff in previous recessions. And then within 3 to 6 months, the temp got hit and then the temp came back. So, you know, once there's a major hit to our to the direct hire business out there, and we don't do a ton of it, but I still watch what others are doing. Once you see that is starting to come down quarter over quarter, that's when things really need to be viewed as there is going to be a slowdown. And you know, the slowdowns tend to be cyclical. This one just happens to be the one that's pushed out much farther, but we're bound to have one. And by the time this next one hits, I think that there's going to be some advancements in AI and technology and the applicant tracking systems that we talked about earlier. They're going to allow us to utilize technology more so than we have had the opportunity to do so in the past.
I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how much the staffing industry has learned from the past few downturns to see how well it survives during this next one, because like you said, we're overdue. It's coming eventually. He is Mike Wiley. He's the CEO of McGrath Systems. You can find out more about them at McGrathSystems.com. Mike, thank you so much for joining us on Secrets of Staffing Success and sharing some of your wisdom and your knowledge in the staffing industry.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you very much.
Tons of great takeaways there from Mike Wiley from McGrath Systems. There was one thing in there in particular that I really wanted to talk about, and it ties into a conversation we were actually just having here in the office right before I came in to interview Mike. And it was a client who was struggling to get people to their jobs on their job board and struggling to get applications. And when I took a look at the job board, the first thing I noticed was there was no salary information listed. And the second thing that I noticed was in the job description itself, they did a good job of talking about why it was important to work for the staffing firm, but they didn't tell you anything about the environment at the job you'd be working at. And so when Mike said that the two key things to attracting candidates, number one is pay rate, and number two is working environment, well, that really jumped out at me. And I said, yeah, this is exactly what we were just talking about. If you're not putting the salary on your job board, how is anybody to know, hey, is this, you know, on McDonald's level, or is this, you know, a little bit more or even a lot more? And something I'd really be interested in. And second, don't just explain what the job is in the job description. Explain where you'll be working. If it's a warehouse position, is this a climate-controlled warehouse? Or will I be, you know, in 100-degree heat in the summertime working? Talk about, you know, what kind of culture there is at this location. So really, don't focus on, you know, the staffing firm. They've already come to you. They say, okay, we are interested in working for your staffing firm. You've already kind of sold them on that. They're at your job board. Focus on the job itself, the job culture, the job environment, and don't forget to put the pay rate in there. It drives me nuts when I see job boards that do not have a pay rate. That's the number one way you're going to attract especially passive candidates right now to that job. So big thanks to Mike Wiley from McGrath Systems. Again, if you want to check out more about them, McGrathSystems.com. And if you'd like to subscribe to this show, Secrets of Staffing Success, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, the podcast app on your Apple device. And of course, all of our episodes are at HaleyMarketing.com. That'll do it for us on this week's episode of Secrets of Staffing Success. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please feel free to leave us a review on any of the sites where you listen to podcasts. And we'll talk to you next time.